It's Friday, January 21, 2011. I'm Albert Moeller, and this is The Briefing, a daily analysis of news and events from a Christian worldview. Two of the main stories we talked about yesterday are getting a great deal of attention today. First of all, the arrest of a doctor in Pennsylvania for what was called a house of horrors in terms of an abortion clinic that was really a place not only of abortions but of infanticide. Now, the interesting conversation about this has to do with the fact that even the mainstream media seemed to understand that what Dr. Kermit Gosnell was doing was abhorrent. But let's look at a couple of things that make this, well, even more interesting. First of all, the New York Times. Here's a major story. Here you have a doctor that is accused of 8 murders. He is accused of killing a woman and of killing 7 children, 7 babies, after having them born live and then killing them with scissors in order to sever their spinal cord. Where would that appear in the New York Times? Well, in Thursday's paper, it appears below the fold at the bottom of the page on page A15. That tells you how to bury a story. And so if you wonder just how the editors of the New York Times think that a story like that is important and how important it is when you consider the sanctity of human life, even when you consider the fact that the angles on this are numerous, having to do with the fact that this was, after all, predatory behavior towards minority women. If you look at all this, you would think there would be plenty of reason for this to be a front page news story for the New York Times, but no. A15, below the fold, bottom of the page. Several other newspapers did similarly, but there were others who put it higher in their priority of editing and of placement in the paper. You also had a different treatment of this story somewhat in the cable news networks because, if for nothing else, this is what the country was discussing. And because of that, the cultural conversation led to a pretty important emphasis on this story in the cable news networks. The other news story had to do, of course, with the Alabama governor and his comments about who was and was not his brother, given the fact he was speaking as a Christian. I ended up speaking to the press about this. I ended up releasing statements to the Associated Press and to the Washington Post because there's a lot of interest in this. But here is another interesting angle. As I mentioned yesterday, what the governor said was theologically right. After all, he's a Southern Baptist. He's a deacon and Sunday school teacher at the First Baptist Church of Tuscaloosa. He thought he was trying to build bridges, but he had the bridges burned behind him. He was speaking of the unity of all believers across race, across time, across ethnicity in Christ, all brothers and sisters in Christ. And he was speaking of his desire that those who do not yet know Christ would come to be his brothers and sisters. Well, this tells us something of how the secular world is not only marked by sensitivities on issues like this that make it almost impossible to talk about anything like this in public without bringing calls of outrage and discrimination and intolerance, but it also tells you something about a governor who's going to have to learn that when he speaks, every single word is recorded, every single word is heard, and if there's an opportunity to take it out of context, it will be taken out of context. This was a governor who's trying to build bridges. He had the bridges burned behind him. He was right in what he had to say, but he chose a context that was probably less than profitable for that kind of conversation. This is a governor who's also a Sunday school teacher. There is a difference in those two roles, but I'm thankful it's the same man. And that's what is crucial in understanding that he is still a believer with the right to speak as a believer. And he did so in this case, and it might not be the end of the controversy. Speaking of politics, a couple of very interesting stories out about senators who are not running in 2012. United States Senators Kent Conrad of North Dakota and Joseph Lieberman of Connecticut have announced that they will not be candidates for election in 2012. When it comes to Senator Lieberman, who is officially an independent but generally votes with the Democrats, you're talking about a man who was almost certain to lose that race. He probably saw what happened with Pennsylvania Senator Arlen Specter losing the race, and with several others of a similar generation and similar political profile, and recognized that he did not want to run this race. Now, the New York Times describes his decision not to run as filled with bitterness after he lost the Democratic nomination in his last run, but successfully ran as an independent. But it also tells us a great deal about how political parties shift and how political generations shift, sometimes in fairly short order. One other senator from the same generation, Richard Lugar of Indiana, indicated that he would be running for his seat in 2012, but recent polls indicate that he may have an uphill climb as well, not only against a possible Democratic opponent, but even within the Republican primary in 2012 in Indiana. We are in an independent age. We're also in a partisan culture. We're in a time of political transition, and a part of that transition is generational. And even as the Tea Party and the by-year elections, the mid-year elections that took place in terms of 2010 brought many new faces to Washington and to state houses and elsewhere, it looks like 2012 may do the very same thing. A news story out of Kentucky is worthy of our note today, and before the week comes to an end, this simply has to be put on our docket. Peter Smith of the Louisville Courier-Journal reports that Martin Gaskell, who was turned down for a position at the University of Kentucky after he'd been the leading candidate to run their new astronomy program, well, it turns out that the University of Kentucky has agreed to pay him a settlement of $125,000. Now, what makes the story interesting? Well, it's because it's right at the intersection of religion and science and politics and education and political correctness. Well, here's what happened. In 2008, Gaskell was to be hired to run a new observatory at the University of Kentucky. He was considered the leading candidate, but in the process of his election to the position, it turned out that he was found to be an evangelical. Or at least, here's the word that was used in one email against him, a, quote, potential evangelical. It turned out that Gaskell had spoken against the theory of evolution by speaking in defense of the theory of intelligent design. Now, some of those involved in the hiring process at the University of Kentucky responded with absolute outrage and shock that someone who could be a scientist of his credentials could question in any way evolution. Now, a closer look at the case indicates that Professor Gaskell is not a creationist. He is some form of evolutionist himself. He holds to some form of intelligent design, but at the same time, he rejects creationism. But that's too much, or was too much, for the folks at the University of Kentucky who turned him down and now had to settle a lawsuit for discrimination on religious bases. Richard Nelson, writing an op-ed in the Louisville Courier-Journal, simply says that the message of this is that potential evangelicals, put that in quotation marks, as it came from the documents in this case, need not apply at the University of Kentucky. This sends a chilling sign throughout higher education, but it also sends us a very clear message. In this case, Professor Gaskell was not a creationist. He does not, whole-scale, reject the theory of evolution. But what he did in questioning the theory of evolution, even in its smallest part, even advocating at some point the consideration of the intelligent design movement, that was enough to derail his hiring. Now, remember that when you hear about the open-mindedness of the academy. There are a lot of other news stories out there that are very good interest and should have our attention as we go into the weekend, but here's one from the New York Times in Thursday's edition. Brian Stelter writes with a headline, "A Racy Show with Teenagers Steps Back from a Boundary." Now, that certainly should have our attention. It tells us a great deal about the culture. The program is called Skins. It's modeled after a United Kingdom. That is a British show, very popular, that is well, it's now given birth to an American form. Skins is about a group of young people, of teenagers, who are living on the edge. Now, here's what makes this really interesting. MTV executives, the program is an MTV program, are concerned that the program may violate child pornography laws. Now, what does that tell you? Well, it tells you that I can't even read to you on this edition of the briefing what is detailed on the front page of the New York Times. It's simply too explicit. It's unnecessary. It should be enough to tell you that MTV executives are concerned that the program they're about to put on the air might violate child pornography laws. Now, what really makes this even more interesting and of greater concern is that it appears that the executives are ordering the changes in order to tone down some of the most explicit content because they don't want to go to jail. Morality doesn't seem to be a consideration here. There's basically no moral argument found anywhere in this coverage. It's a legal argument. We don't want to get in trouble. We don't want to go to jail. But we're going to take it right up to the limits of the law. We'll see where this story leads. Louisville Courier-Journal also had another very interesting story this week. It's a cover story entitled Gospel in Action, and it has to do with adoption and evangelical Christians adopting by the thousands, in particular, international adoptions. This institution is something of ground zero of that movement. My colleague, Dr. Russell Moore, has written the definitive work on this topic, and he has contributed much energy. Highview Baptist Church here in Louisville is also at the center. the Melber family. Dave Melber and his family are shown on the front page. What would be the question about this? Why would anyone question the morality of adopting children who are, after all, abandoned and orphaned in international contexts in which they have almost no hope? Well, it's interesting that the politically correct folks will show up on this and suggest that, for instance, this is a form of child trafficking, of human trafficking, or that it is wrong to take these children out of their native cultures and environments. Catherine Joyce, the author of the book Quiverful, Inside the Christian Patriarchy Movement, warned that there is a strong taint of colonialism in the evangelical adoption movement. As the reporter for the Courier Journal said, quoting her, it is casting Americans as saviors and focusing on adoption as a solution for impoverished communities. Now, this tells you that there are some people who would rather have their political correctness than have children rescued. It's very, very sad. I do appreciate a statement made by a professor at the Kent School of Social Work at the University of Louisville. Terry Singer said this. He isn't so concerned about a possible goal of building an army of converts among these evangelicals. If some of these kids can be given some permanency and consistency in their lives and some love, well, that's a word of sanity in the midst of all of this. Let's remember that adoption is not just a legal matter. It's not just a political or cultural matter. It's not just a family matter for Christians. It's a central metaphor for our salvation in Christ. We are all orphans in need of adoption, and by God's grace, we are adopted in Christ. There is no more beautiful picture of the gospel than the adoption of an orphan, which is in itself a picture of the gospel in action. Thanks for listening to The Briefing. For more information, go to my website at albertmohler.com. You'll find more information about the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary at sbts.edu. Information about Boyce College can be obtained by going to boycecollege.com. You can follow me on Twitter by going to twitter.com/AlbertMohler. I'll meet you again on Monday for The Briefing.